Welcome to the Aussie Villains podcast. Paul, joined by the crew, Tess, Ryan and Spud. We're going to look at our potential new signing. We're going to look at three players that you would have brought into the club from any generation, any time, any club, and that you would have loved to have seen at Villa. This is the Aussie Villains podcast. Get us at Aussie Villains on Twitter, capital A, capital V. Get us at Australian Fans of Villa on Facebook and our Facebook group. You can also listen to this podcast on Google, Spotify, Apple, Anchor, wherever you want to. My name's Paul. The rest of the crew cannot wait to talk about Villa. This is the Aussie Villains podcast.
Transfer news to bring you this afternoon, and Mark McAdam has sidled up next to me in the studio, and this is good for me as well because I don't know what you're going to say, Mark, so tell us.
Now, this is breaking news that has reached us here at Sky Sports News in the last few moments, and Aston Villa fans, it concerns your club because Aston Villa are in advanced talks with Villarreal over the signing of the centre-back Pau Torres. Now, this is, of course, a player that Unai Emery knows well. He's going back to his former side to bring the man who has just 1 year left on his current Villarreal contract to the Premier League. We understand this will cost Aston Villa around £45 million. Torres currently has a release clause that is €70 million. Because of the nature of the contract, it's understood that Aston Villa have got some favourable terms with regards to that release clause, therefore can sign the player. Now, we're expecting a medical to be done within the next 48 hours or so, should the final green light get given by Aston Villa and Villarreal over the transfer.
Another Aussie Villains podcast. It's Paul, joined by my co-hosts Spud and Rhino. Boys, how are we?
Yeah, going well, mate.
Feels like it was a year ago, or not far off a year ago, that I met you boys in the flesh. So we'd only be a few weeks away from a year, wouldn't it?
I think it was the 16th of July last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, so a couple of weeks into almost a year of knowing each other and deciding, hey, we might as well give this podcast lark a bit of a go.
It's a fun one because a year's gone really quick, but in footballing terms, it's felt like a lifetime with everything that's gone on.
Honestly, it was. It's absolutely a Crowded House songs, four seasons in one day. So, yeah, all good. Boys, the Torres signing, it's been drawn out. It's been everyone here, there and everywhere. And I think we should find out that it will be complete sometime this week. He's still on holidays. And I just probably want to say this to our supporters is that most of the players, and Spud, you said it last week, so many of the players are on holidays or duties at the moment. So until they've passed the physical and actually signed a bit of paper, they cannot be confirmed as a player. So he comes back, I believe, or he's going to be in the Midlands this week some stage.
Yeah, it looks that way, doesn't it, from all the reports. And again, probably not going to get too excited until I see him holding the jersey. But it looks like it's all going the right way, though, which is one of them transfers that has been out in the open for a while, actually, isn't it? Unusual for us because most of them are sort of under the radar now. But this one has been highlighted, you know, quite a while back. But yeah, exciting if it does happen.
Well, I'm certain it's going to happen, guys. He's got 1 year left on his contract. They were asking for some silly money. It looks like it's going to be somewhere in between 35 and 55 million, somewhere in there. None of us actually know yet. So, Spud, your thoughts, mate?
Yeah, well, I think his release clause is 55 million. But obviously with a year in his contract, that leaves room for negotiation. So, look, I think it's looking like a deal that's going to suit all parties. By all accounts, he's always wanted to come to the Premier League. It's another step up in quality for us, and I suppose Villarreal still get a decent price for him, you know. I think it's done. Usually when Villa release that, they've had a price accepted, you're usually at the stage of only a medical, and it's rare enough where clubs fail a medical, players fail a club medical. So yeah, I would just assume it's done. It's just a matter of jersey before you can put your eggs in anything. It's a done deal, and it's a brilliant deal, I think.
I think the thing for us is we're spending considered money. Yes, we're spending a bit, but it's what the market's dictating. So we're not paying overs. We're not going silly. If we sign him, and we might wait on what we think of him as a player, because I think some people have got some questions in our feeds.
Yep.
But, I mean, I just find it a little bit funny, boys, that people are like, well, that means players are gone from the team and squad. I don't think that necessarily does. We'll talk about that one a little bit later on. It'll make sense. Anything you guys want to bring up? Any questions you have before we get into some listeners' questions, guys?
No, I'm pretty happy to get into the listener questions. Seen quite a few out there on the socials. And again, thanks to all the listeners for getting them in. They, you know, the best part of the pod for me. Really enjoy answering them.
Yeah, absolutely. We did put up a question around three players that you could bring in to the squad as well. And that got some really great feedback. So we had a question a few days ago. Name three players from any generation, any team, that you wish had played for Villa. I had Roberto Baggio, Johan Cruyff and Maradona. So, Mike, did you guys get a chance to answer that one at all?
I didn't get a chance to answer because I thought you were going to ask it on the pod, so I didn't bother.
Definitely was going to ask it on the pod. So I might start with you, Spud, then we'll get into some listeners and readers ones, and then we'll go to you there, Rhino, as well. So off to you, Spud.
Sure. Three players that I think would have been, I'd love to see in the Villa jersey, you know, from any period in history.
Yep.
The first one I would have absolutely loved. So when I was growing up, obviously, my dad was a Scouser, so he was a mad Everton fan, and I was a mad Villa fan. But where we had our common love was AC Milan. So when I was growing up, like, Italian football was huge, like, at the time. And everyone in Ireland and England had an Italian team, like. Much the same as the new generation all have a Premier League team, you know. So you had your Premier League team, but in the early 90s, AC Milan were just unbelievable team, like. And my father kind of introduced me to them, and they were just, they were like the kingpins of Europe at the time. And my hero at the time of that team, of a brilliant team, was Marco van Basten.
Yes.
He was an absolute hero of mine as a kid, as a young, really young kid, because my dad was just saying, you're watching a player in history. Fortunately, he was very unlucky to get it. His career had to end early because of injuries, but phenomenal goal scorer. Just his record, his finishing, could do absolutely everything. And that AC Milan team at the time had Frank Rijkaard, Ruud Gullit and Marco van Basten.
Yeah.
So, he was Dean Saunders would have been my first real Villa hero, but my first real football hero was Marco van Basten. So Marco van Basten for me would be my first choice. As I got older then, obviously, and I started to appreciate football for different, in understanding football in different levels, I thought later on, I've talked about him a few times in this pod, was Thierry Henry. I still, to this day, think he's the best foreigner to play in the Premier League. Probably the best player, if not the best player, to be honest, that has played in the Premier League for me. So he would have been my second. And then, like, the best player of my generation was Leo Messi. So he's probably the greatest player I've in my lifetime. So that would be my three, Van Basten, Henry and Messi.
Well, I'll just go back to mine, because it's kind of funny how I'm a little bit older than you, but I went Roberto Baggio because of Serie A, because most Aussies have a team there. I went Johan Cruyff because my coach has always talked about someone changing a game, and he did. You can see any number of players doing the Cruyff turn. And Maradona. I just can't go past Maradona for me. It doesn't matter what podcast I'm doing, I'll chuck a reference into him. So listeners here, we had some great ones here. Villa Prince, he had Beckham, one of the greatest free kick takers you'll ever see.
Yeah.
Ronaldinho, another player who just did what he had to do, but was so amazing to watch. And he went to Thierry Henry as well. So thank you very much here, Villa Prince. Amazing trio. You can't argue with any of them because they're all great.
Yeah.
John Colclough or Coquaff went Paolo Rossi. Yes, very nice again. Matt Letizia, who just gives chubby people, you know, just a good sense of achievement there, because God, he could play.
Yeah.
And Paolo Mandini. That's a nice trio, those three.
Mandini's a good shout.
Would have been a fair bit of food eaten by a couple of them. Here we go. Oh, this is Amrik. I'm just going to say it. Amrik B3. I haven't got my warning signal on because Tess is not here today. But you've gone a few here. But anyway, he's gone Ronaldo Nazario. Yes, we know which Ronaldo that is.
and Pelé. He's also going Maradona or Ronaldinho. He can't quite decide between them. And then just to throw in a great 1982 Brazilian World Cup side, he's gone the trio of Eder, Zico and Socrates. So he's had a bit of an each way there. It's very hard, isn't it?
It's a tough one to pick. And I sort of, with mine, I just agree with Spud. Like Italian football, like when I was growing up there in the, you know, the 90s and the early 2000s, Serie A was probably the best league with the best players at the time. So my three players all came from Serie A, actually. Oh,
beautiful. Let them rip, mate.
Yeah, and like you're saying, everyone sort of had a team, didn't they, growing up? And I used to like Lazio when in the early 2000s, because they just had some, yeah, they just had quality players everywhere. So the first one, Zidane, goes without saying, one of the best players to grace the game, probably one of the best first touches I've ever seen, and just a magician. So yeah, when he was playing at Juve, obviously was class and went on to Madrid. The next one was Pavel Nedved, the Czech. Ooh, nice long blonde hair, Paul. I'm sure you'll be, you know, all over that. But he was a class act as well. Played for Lazio and then went on to Juventus. And I just used to love watching him play. A bit of a winger slash forward, and was just, yeah, probably didn't get the props he deserved because there was probably a lot of superstars around him, but he was just a brilliant player.
Yeah.
And my last one is probably one of my favorite strikers of all time. And I ended up scoring a screamer against Villa for Chelsea. And I was sort of happy, obviously sad, but happy at the same time. But Hernan Jorg Crespo for me.
Crespo was class, yeah.
He scored a brilliant goal against us at Villa Park where he cut back in on his right foot and curled one into practically the top corner. And I'd always loved him growing up, and went to watch him, you know, I wasn't at the game, but watching it on telly and to see him just scoring an absolute screamer at Villa Park was just, yeah, it was unreal.
That's a really good call.
He was class in the first half of the Champions League final, that crazy Champions League final where Liverpool and Milan played. Himself and Kaká absolutely destroyed Liverpool in that first half.
He had it all, didn't he, Crespo? He had great movement. Wasn't particularly pacey, but had great movement, knew where to be, and could finish with both feet and head. So he was just, I love that sort of player.
It was surprising it never really worked for him at Chelsea. You know, he had moments, but when he signed for Chelsea, I thought, wow, that is some signing for them.
Yeah, so did I. And I actually, I was the same. I thought that was going to be the catalyst for Chelsea going on to win a fair bit. But like you said, it didn't happen for him, did it really?
No. And for a number of reasons. I mean, you've got age, you've got system, injuries. There's so many reasons it didn't quite work. But what a player he was. I will say also for our Aussie listeners, they might get this reference a bit more. Definitely a Kath from Kath and Kim haircut as well. So well done to be able to be a professional and have a Kath and Kim haircut. Carl from ABC JJ, he's gone Henri, another one for Henri. Cristiano Ronaldo. Now, love him or hate him, you can see that. And Iniesta, absolutely love that as well. That's the first Iniesta mentioned there. Baz Robbo, ABC, has gone Zinedine Zidane, Alonso. Yeah, I can see that. And he's gone Cristiano Ronaldo as well. Who else we got here? Another Cristiano Ronaldo. Oh, no. Let me go back on that Cristiano Ronaldo. No, it's Ronaldo from Brazil. I do apologize. Another Ronaldo from Brazil from Wayne Turner, Roberto Carlos and Ronaldinho. Those Brazilian teams with those players at that point, how great were they to watch?
Yeah.
You just wonder how they didn't win more. Maybe they had too many of the same kind of player. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe that's the point. Another one for, this is from Tom Hewitt, 14. Zinedine Zidane, Messi and Maldini. A lot of Italian love here. Another one.
There is.
Brad, AVFC Web, Zidane, Digne, Maldini. Lovely combo. Anders Andres 2 went Mario Kempes, Michael Laudrup, and Ronaldo Luis Nazario de Lima. Yes, I like that. Well done, because that is actually his full name. Richard Asson went, and remember, guys, this is not just three players you love. This is three players we would have loved to have seen at Villa Park and be yelling their name. Gazza, Shearer, and Zidane. Zidane getting all the love here. Shearer. Ooh. Imagine how many goals he would have scored for us. My God. Yep. I like it. We would have got goals, glory, and Gazzaremas. Greaves, Best, and Cruyff. So, yes, nice one. This is from Steve Villain K7R. Jimmy Greaves, George, and Cruyff. Gosh. I'm not sure what you guys think of that. Obviously, in that, we would have had pies for some of our players, and it would have been a lot of beers for someone else, but I'll let that one go. Now, we have a Millsy 78 Villa Till I Die has gone a bit of a tongue-in-cheek one of these real ones, okay? Titus Bramble, Carlton Palmer, and Robbie Earl.
That's a name I haven't used for a while, Titus Bramble. So, yeah, blast from the past.
That's just, I love it. I love taking the mick. But he's gone Van Basten, Seedorf, and Zidane. So Zidane's killing it here. I think, you know, I'm actually surprised not because of how great he is, but how much love he's got from the Villa fans here, guys.
Yeah, generational player. Like you said, he was in my list as well. And he pops up on Twitter a fair bit in my feed, just like highlights of him and stuff. And I always take a couple of minutes just to have a look. And yeah, just beautiful player to watch on the ball. And yeah, another one who had it all, really strength, touch, both feet. Yeah, unbelievable. And Jamie went out the way he did in the World Cup with a headbutt on Materazzi. But, you know, that's football, isn't it?
Roy Keane always says that Zidane was the best footballer he ever played against. He said everything. And he said, like, he's massive on the pitch. He's a lot bigger than he looks like when you're playing standing next to him. Like, you know, but he's like, Roy Keane in an interview just said, everyone talks about me and Patrick's battle, but he said the toughest, hardest man I ever played against was Zidane. He said he was an unbelievable footballer, but he was hard as nails too.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people forget, not just the skills, how hard he was. And I think that had a lot to do with his background, if you've seen any docos and stuff as well. Steve, Kissed by C has, first of all, I wish Hiltzberger had stayed with us or returned, but he's gone Lothar Matthäus and Cruyff. Yeah, Matthäus, yeah, underrated in my mind. Scotty, ABC8, has gone Giggs. Zidane and Batistuta. John, who has been on our pod, a Newcastle fan, and he's on my Love Sport podcast, he would have had Batistuta in any time, I reckon. So, yeah, that's some...
He owns a winery in WA, Batistuta.
He what, sorry?
He's retired to a winery in WA, Batistuta.
Well, he can't wait. He was always class, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's got a winery in WA. He lives
there.
Yeah, that's where he's retired to, yeah.
I didn't know that. How did he end up over there?
What's that?
How did he end up there? What's the, like, did
know.
He...
He's been here as long as I've lived here. Like.
Well, that's bad, isn't it?
Never met him or anything, but yeah, he owns a winery over there, apparently. Yeah.
That's
incredible. Become the WA, we're going to that winery, guys.
Yeah. I don't even know which one it is, but I was reading about one, yeah.
Oh, we're gonna do our research. Ryan, who comes into the pod a lot, not you, Rhino, Ryan at 97705946. Scholes, Torres from Liverpool, but in his prime, he's put in brackets, and David Seaman. Really didn't want to pick the obvious one, so yeah, I suppose it's a little bit of a strange combo. But you know what? That's the beauty of it. If they're three you would have wanted to see, then that's fair enough. You've gone Manchester United, Liverpool, and Arsenal players there. I like it. Thank you for that being a bit different. Yeah, Seaman at his best. He was a very, very good keeper as well. Scholes, I think just like what you were saying, he was really hard too. For a guy not very big. And we never got to see quite the best of Torres, I thought.
Yeah, I think his Liverpool days are obviously his best. And again, another striker who went to Chelsea and sort of didn't do much and fell apart a little bit from there. But Torres at Liverpool was probably unplayable at one point, wasn't he? Probably two seasons worth there. And just seeing him giving, you know, Vidic and Ferdinand a torrid time was always good. And Paul Scholes, the one that's etched in my memory is the FA Cup goal at Villa Park from a corner. I think it's Gabor Corrali in goals for us in his bloody grey tracksuit bottoms and just smashes one in, doesn't he, off the crossbar. And what a player Scholes was, just terrorised us for years as well. Terrorised a few teams, but yeah, brilliant choices there.
We'll do a few more before we get into some of our questions, because this is, this just really showed the love that Villains have for other teams. Zlatan, this is from Osama. ABFC Najab, Jib, sorry. Zlatan, Perlo, and Ronaldo. That's, yeah, like that. Would there be no highlights packages we would have seen at Villa Park from those three? That was sarcasm again. Scott Little, 85. He's gone Roberto Carlos. Some of the greatest hard, absolute net-ripping free kicks ever. Pirlo and another Roberto Baggio. Townsend at Staunton. Thank you. You're a long-time listener and reader as well. He's gone the Brazilian Ronaldo, Zidane, and Ronaldinho. Gav SI 1814 has gone Ronaldo from Brazil, Zidane, and Messi. And we'll just finish it off with a couple more. Jack AV6, Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi, and Pelé. Yeah, that would have been bloody horrible at Villa Park as well. And that's the first Pelé mention, guys. It's funny how time changes things, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maradona, this is from Akal Hasbro. Maradona, Zidane, and Van Basten. And we'll finish off Andy Taplin, Xavi, Iniesta, and Gerd Muller. Oh, yes. Very good. Almost Gerd Muller's almost a better national player than he was anywhere else. But what unbelievable combinations people put in there. And Villa Park would have been absolutely blessed to have any of them.
Yeah.
Guys, before we get into listeners' questions, were there any questions that you guys had for the pod yourself?
Not particularly, no. I think there's a good list of questions there, so.
No questions here. We'll start with Ian Allman. And Ian Allman 5 has written, what tactics do you see Emery playing more and less of in the new season? Cheers, boys.
Spud, you're the tactician out of all of us, mate. You take this one first.
Sorry, what was the question, boy?
The question was, what tactics do you see Emery playing more and less of in the new season?
Just
be aware, my dogs are going to start barking at any moment, guys.
Sorry, I usually get fast forward to the parts when I'm giving stories anyway, Paul. So.
No,
pretty joking. I think we're going to see 5-3-2 a bit more. I reckon I think we're going to see in Europe a little bit and against the bigger teams. I think we're going to see 5-3-2 a bit more. Three centre halves, three in the middle. And my thinking there is because I think against the bigger teams, so we're not getting overrun in midfield. If you have a nice control with Tillemans, Kamara, and Luiz, you start without having any issues then. And then you have three at the back in your Kanza. And any of the back three really could do a job there. Plus, you'll have your wingers playing up high. And then you can push McGinn up behind Ollie Watkins. And what you have then is normally a lot of these big teams will take Man City for argument because they're the ones that we're going to have to give a lot of possession up to. They have Rodri sitting back. Whereas then if you have someone sitting in behind Ollie like McGinn, he can drop back and pick up Rodri or whoever that player may be. And you still have your three in the middle. So and then you go like up with your Haalands or someone if you have your three in the back. I think you can then say to Tyrone Mings or whoever, your job is Haaland. But you're not giving up as much space to the other attackers around you. Because some games you just have to respect you're not going to see much of the ball, you know? So you need to put your game. Now, it's not something he's played yet, but it is something he has played a lot in the future, and in the past, sorry, with other teams. And he's done quite a bit with Villarreal against Barcelona, Madrid and stuff. Everywhere I see, they're like, oh, he's never played 5-3-2. So I think people answer questions without actually doing the research. Like, so he has done it a lot. Like when you read on Twitter, he's never done it and stuff. I can tell you now he's done it loads of times in European games with Villarreal. He's done it loads of times against Barcelona and Madrid with Sevilla. His own little version of it, but it is 5-3-2. You know? It's not going to be our base formation though, because you can't dominate possession with 5-3-2. Typically, you're giving up too much space higher up the pitch, so you don't expect to see it in the games that we're going to have possession as much, but definitely the games where we're going to be limited and you have to be effective with the ball when you do see it. I think we now have a core of players that is well suited to the 5-3-2.
What about yourself there, Ron? I think that's really, yeah, I think what you've said there, Spud, is a fantastic analysis. And you do have to have gone back and watched how he's set up almost everywhere, and he does mix it up a bit. So, I really love that. Over to you, Ron.
Yes, similar spot. I think it will change this season. I think we were quite rigid with a 4-4-2 in the season just gone, only because of the personnel we had. And I think obviously signings coming in will dictate the shape and the formations we play. And obviously, Pau Torres being close, or you know, being close to signing, means that we've then got an extra centre back, and you look at we're quite strong in that position now. So I wouldn't be surprised either to see us go three at the back, three centre halves, as Spud said, for certain games, especially when you sort of want to overload the midfield and push the wing backs a bit further up, and you know, create five in midfield to block up the space. But I think it'll be horses for courses, and you know, given that we're going to be in Europe as well, I think it'll be managing the players, their game time and the injuries. And I think we have to be fluid and have the options there. And but I'm, you know, under Emery, I think I've probably never been so confident in a manager in the past. And I think the players he brings in this summer with Monchi, I think it's going to be a really good summer for us. And yeah, I'm just really looking forward to what they do next season.
Yeah, I'm with both of you. I think one of the things we'll see, and it's the reason we're looking at the signings, is yes, we'll be playing out for the back, but I think we're going to do it a lot quicker. We did hold the ball quite a bit. I think if we do get Torres, which is looking pretty good, and Tillemans, we've got a lot of outlets. We're getting even more outlets. So I think we'll play a pretty similar style, but we'll be playing a bit quicker out from the back as well. And I think the thing that you both pointed out is the flexibility. This is not a rigid manager. This is a manager who's going to change it up per games. And you were saying that, Spud and Ryan, when he was, even last season, we were saying he just doesn't have the troops to change it as much as he probably wants at the moment. We didn't have the depth of squad, and we didn't really have the kind of players you could change too much of what we were doing.
I think the Brighton last game of the season is the prime example of that, really. You know, he only made one sub in that game, and probably our most important game of the season. It came down to the end because we had to win to secure Europe, but he could only make one change. And then because of injuries and there was different variables, but you looked at that bench at the time, and I think about 4 or 5 weeks previous, you looked at the bench and you thought, yeah, that's a good bench. But by the end of the season, you're looking at that bench and going, well, there's not many game changers on that, you know? I know the biggest whinge I've seen, like from on Twitter and stuff, is like a lot of people say, "Oh, why are we going around buying a massive, spending so much money on a centre back when there's other areas that are more crucial? Like going forward, we're blessed in the midfield, but like we're best in the midfield and we're blessed in the centre backs. Why are we signing there first?" But like I've said, like on this podcast numerous times, like just because Emery got the best out of the players he had, it doesn't necessarily mean they were the players that he wanted. And words like the people are saying, "Oh, we need to concentrate more on the attack." Emery may see Torres as a hugely important part to that attack because he's so good at playing out of the back, you know, and we like to build from the back. So
thank you.
Emery's not just buying, like he's buying players to fit the team. Like us as fans, we're just so tunnel vision, like, "Oh, he's buying a centre back." But like Emery has a plan, you know. If you look at Torres's overall stats, like his forward plays, possession stats, and they try to get wrapped up in stats so much, but they do give you an indication of what a style player is like. He plays the ball forward a lot. He's unbelievably comfortable on the football. Like, so fans can whinge all they want saying, "Why are we overloading with centre backs?" But he's obviously going to be an important part of the puzzle for us going forward.
And that's exactly what I was saying about the playing out from the back quicker. Yeah. Is that you've got you'll have the troops who can do that. And so, yeah, no, I totally concur, guys. So, no, I can't see massive changes. And also the other thing that we've got to remember is that the players were getting used to that style as well. You're playing one brand of football and now you're playing another. So I even see there being improvement in the players who've got used to that. And he's not going to keep it completely rigid because he's not going to let other teams be able to do the research on Villa and go, "Yeah, this is the way he's going to play, so let's do that." And we were counted a couple of times last year.
That happened to us a lot under Smith and Gerrard as well.
Yeah.
Like we like Dean Smith, like, you know, for all the respect I have for him, he was very limited at the top level. He was a great championship manager, but tactically, he just wasn't up there with the better managers. You know, he gave his all. Like, I'll never, ever, you'll never hear me disrespecting Dean Smith. I have lots of respect for what the man done for us. Yep. But there was games, I think, there's one particular game, I think, that sticks to mind for me. It was a Tottenham game, and I think Son that absolutely hammered us. Whatever way we were setting up with our back four in the games, yep, in a row, and we looked really good. I think we went on a little run where we won a good couple of games under Smith. And it, like, the season we started, actually, I think we won the first four games of the season. Do you remember? I think and Tane Loft. I think we, yep, after four games, we were up in third or fourth place, but we ended up having to survive in the last day of the season. But I remember, I think it was Tottenham came, and suddenly they were just playing these balls over the top behind our back, our flat back four. And we just got destroyed. And then for every, yeah, team that turned up at Villa Park for about three or four games after, had the same tactic. And we just didn't have the backup to change it, to break it down. And we went on an awful bad run then for a while where we were just, and it was the ball over the top that was killing us every time. And
yeah,
I just don't think Emery would allow that go on for too long. You know, if someone finds a weakness in our team, he's so tactically flexible that I think he will fix that, like, and he's proved he can, because after the Man City, Leicester and Arsenal games where we just conceded 11 goals in three games, he tightened things up. Like, he was raging after one of the, I think was it the Arsenal game where we conceded the two late goals?
Yeah.
He was raging after that because he was saying, like, that, I don't mind us losing, but if we do it, trying to do the right thing, but everything I taught him just went out the window for that last 20 minutes. And, yeah, I just don't think he's one-dimensional, and I think that's brilliant for us, that we're not going to just see. I think he's going to have his home base. I think the 4-4-1-1 is going to be the home base, but we're going to be a lot more flexible tactically in games.
I was going to say the same thing as you, Spud. Like, him under Smith and Gerrard, you know, we were very, very predictable, I thought. And, you know, probably only one style of play and one way of setting up. Whereas with Emery, I think, you know, you see small tweaks and small changes, even in game, that just keep the opposition guessing and keep them on their toes. And I think, you know, given he's going to get some more backup, you know, with players coming in this summer, I think we'll start seeing even more tweaks once he gets the cattle in that he wants and the players that he trusts. But yeah, I think, predictability was a big problem for us. Like you say, under Smith, loved our time under Dean Smith, but there was games where we were screaming out for changes,
yeah,
and, or, you know, something a bit different, and it just, there was nothing there.
Even Eddie Howe, like, after the Newcastle game, Eddie Howe talked about how they got cut off guard, the way that Villa went not long, but a little bit longer, because he said, yeah, they had set up for Villa playing out the back, because you just expected it at home, and suddenly they were bypassing the press with the diagonal balls. And Howe said, Eddie, I remember Eddie Howe saying at the time, when you've worked on something all week, it's very hard to change that quickly in game. And he said, we just ended up getting overrun. So that's the kind of thing that he'd done. And I just don't think Gerrard or Smith, I won't say that, of course they can see it. If I can see it, if you can see it, of course they, like, they're professional managers, they can see it. But it's one thing being able to see something, but it's a totally different thing having the preparation done to be able to change it in an instant. Whereas that's where Emery strikes. He's planning for A, B and C during the week. He's not planning for plan A. There is a backup if we go one down, if this doesn't work. And Mings has talked about that. Mings is like, you're just getting an idea of what he wants me at, and suddenly he throws you another curveball saying, but if we go 1-0 down, not in those words, but he was talking about, like, he throws something at you that you're not expecting, and it completely changes the way the game's going to go. So he said, we go into that game knowing what he's looking for. If we go 2 down, like, he just said the preparation is just unbelievable. Like, and I just don't think Gerrard and Smith did that, you know?
Smithwick, Villain 84. At Green underscore Raqueeb, he's written, "What's your channel?" Well, guys, the Aussie Villains podcast is through the Love Sport podcast network. So if you look up Love Sport on Apple, Anchor, Google, Spotify, if you look up the Love Sport podcast network, we're under that. And we always put the links up on our Twitter and Facebook pages as well. So you can find us at Love Sport podcast network. If you look that up, we're definitely under there. So appreciate that question as well. VO, Villa Opinions, he's written, of all Aussie players, past and present, who would you want for this current Aston Villa team for the coming season? Keeping in mind our current system and positions we may be looking to recruit for. Do you mind if I take this one, boys, to start with?
You first, man. I've got you go for it.
Mark Viduka.
Oh, I had the same. I had the same, but yep. I've got someone else as a backup, so that's all right.
Yeah, I think I might know who you got as a backup. But yeah, Mark Viduka, because he's something we really do lack, and he can hold up the ball facing the goal, and he could hold up the ball and distribute it facing away from the goal. Could also score absolute ripper goals. Has to be in this current squad, Mark Viduka for me.
Brilliant shot, brilliant striker in his time, wasn't he, at Leeds? And even before that, but you probably saw him a little bit at Celtic before he came down. And yeah, just a quality goal scorer. Good feet for a big man as well. I know that's a bit of a cliche, but he did have really good feet and good size as well.
Probably sacrificed his goal scoring to be that player who helped a lot of others out. So for me, he probably, his goal scoring record, and this is why I don't completely always go by stats, he made every team he played for better. So, yep. Yeah, Mark Viduka for me.
Brilliant player.
So what was the question, sorry, lad?
Of all the Aussie players, past and present, who would you want for this current Aston Villa team for the coming season, keeping in mind our system and so forth?
I'll go Tim Cahill for me, just as a player who can play a bit further forward, and something we've spoke about in our private chats that we desperately lack is a presence in the air, especially from set pieces. And I don't think there was any better header of the ball in the Premier League era for me than Tim Cahill. Would just find space and bury him. So yeah, he's a brilliant player, and probably for me was linked to some big teams, or you know, Arsenal's, etc. Never really got his big move, unfortunately, but I think he could have played at some of the top teams. But yeah, for me, Tim Cahill, aerial ability and just a good physical presence in the midfield, or playing just off the striker.
Absolute Socceroos legend as well. Scored a couple of absolute rippers in World Cups. So yeah, that's a really good call. Over to you, Spud.
Basing it on, like, because obviously I expect there to be quite a tweaks to our system, so I'll base it off the system we just played under Emery, that 4-4-1-1, the way we played with the wingers inverted. For me, I think the perfect player, because he was so inconsistent, Bailey, this year, the perfect player to come in and play Bailey's role would have been prime Harry Kewell at Leeds.
Yeah, yep. he was my backup, mate.
Yeah, so he never done it when he went to Liverpool, but that when Leeds were good under David O'Leary, when they had that run to the Champions League semi-final and stuff, Harry Kewell was unbelievable. I don't think he gets enough credit for how good he actually was for that Leeds team. For it wasn't a long period that he was playing unbelievable, maybe two seasons, but there was two or three seasons there where he was class, and I really enjoyed watching. I really enjoyed watching that whole Leeds team under David O'Leary, to be honest. They were brilliant.
He scored an absolute screamer at Elland Road against us just after the halfway line, didn't he? Sort of bounced up and just sort of half volley and just flew. I think it was David James in goals, just flew past him.
His ability to carry the ball, I think, was very underrated. I remember, against Leeds, because that run to the Champions League semi-final, it was probably the toughest year ever to play in the Champions League, because it was the only year that they ever brought in two group stages, if you remember. So, so you had to do your groups, and then the last 16 was a group as well. So it was really, really gruesome on the players. And they were coming up against teams it was either Valencia or Deportivo. They beat one of them in the quarters and then the other knocked them out. I think it might have been Deportivo knocked them out in the semi-final. But brilliant Deportivo team at the time. But I remember, and obviously the Premier League season is grueling, but they had a run in both cups as well at the time. So they had played an unbelievable amount of games that season, and they just looked jaded towards the end of the season. But I remember Q, the ball carrying he was doing for them, taking the pressure off the back. And he scored some important goals. And I think sometimes people forget how good he actually was, because his career nosedived so quickly. But and people seem to only remember that he flopped at Liverpool as opposed to how good he was at Leeds, you know. So I thought, for me, he would have been perfect now in this team.
I think also what you said, and I had him down. I couldn't decide between him and Viduka, but I remember the joy Viduka gave me and what we actually need in terms of that ability to hold the ball up and score. But Harry Kewell did score 45 goals for Leeds. Obviously was quite injured when he went over to Liverpool. And then what really turned people off, Leeds supporters that I've spoken to, was when he went to Galatasaray. It was kind of like he could have chosen almost any other club. And it was a club that there's history there. And that's the reason, in my mind, Spud, that so many people went off him or have kind of forgotten him compared to what they think of Viduka.
Yeah.
That did not help.
I think there was a bit of bad blood between the two clubs from when the two Leeds fans got huge.
And so that was a really, for the Leeds fans that I've spoken to, they couldn't believe he chose that club where he could have chosen just almost any other club. Mm-hmm. He's managed a few clubs now. He was Watford under-23s, Crawley Town for a year, Notts County, Oldham, Barnet, and now he's a first-team coach at Celtic. So he's definitely got his coaching hat on as well.
I was wondering if he would make his way to Tottenham with Ange Postecoglou, actually, because obviously, you know, obviously the Celtic link there, and we've just seen Jedinak leave Villa and go across with Ange. So I was surprised that he hasn't gone down there yet.
Yeah, I think maybe he wants to kind of get, you know, forge his own path with it, maybe a potentially bigger club. I'm not saying a bigger club, but a bigger club than what he's managed before. When we say, you know, Crawley, Notts County, Oldham, Barnet, I mean, Celtic, if you can get a chance there down the track, I mean, that's a huge feather, isn't it?
Yeah, that's huge.
So maybe that's the reason. Here's another Aussie one. It's all coming in now. The Jedi has moved on, obviously, off to Tottenham with Angie. She said, who is the next great Aussie to make his or her mark at AVFC?
Oh, that's probably a good question for you, Paul. You've probably got your finger on the pulse with Australian football, probably more than what I have.
I had two trains of thought in this one. One is a player who's playing in Spain at the moment, but he's getting, you know, he's late 20s now. It's kind of like I saw him as a teenager and thought he was going to go on. And that's Mabil. He's playing at Cadiz at the moment. And I thought he potentially... But I think I was just wondering, and I'd have to double check, but is Emily Gilnick still at Villa?
Don't think so.
I really thought... I thought that she could have gone on and almost been a Villa captain, because I just know a lot about her at the moment. So I just want to double check, guys, before I make a embarrassing mistake there. No? Here we go. She's still a forward at Villa. So she's 31.
She mustn't be getting a lot of game time, though, is she? Because I know Alicia Lehman and Rachel Daly are the main strikers there now.
Yeah, she was injured again last year. And I suppose this just goes to show where the state of the Australian game is if we're talking about coming to Villa. So I still think Gilnick has an ability. She's 31. I'd be really surprised if she doesn't go on and coach somewhere, and that's maybe where she makes her mark. So I'll leave it over to you guys, but I don't see, unless there's young Aussies coming through, I don't see a real path for the next big Aussie at the moment at Villa.
When I read this question, like for me, the one thing that came to mind for me, like, and this is just a complete, like, there's absolutely no substance behind this, only what my own opinion that something the club would look at was that, because obviously Villa have now in the women's become the only club that's closed that gap to the main women. Like, I mean, Chelsea, Arsenal, United and City are big in the women's there, and there's a big gap down, but Villa have done a phenomenal job in closing that gap now. They're probably the best of the rest now, and the owners really are starting to put in some investment. So I was thinking if they were to crack the European spots, or, you know, like kick on like they have, which they're threatening to do so. And I think there's a lot of hope around the club that next step is going to be made next season, and they're building lovely. And obviously after signing Rachel Daly and stuff there, it was a huge coup for them. I was thinking, Paul, that then once you do that, you've got to start looking at bringing in a big name player. And I was thinking maybe Ellie Carpenter from Olympic Lyonnais.
Yes, nice. Yeah,
and a player like that. Maybe as an Aussie to come in and be a big profile name to take Villa to the next step. So I was thinking, yeah, because she's massively respected in the women's game. Leon have a serious women's team.
I don't disagree with you. I think that's an absolutely brilliant call, except I don't know why she would leave. With what she's doing at the moment.
Money in the Premier League, Paul, it's still the same in the women's. The money's still better in the women's in England. They've got all the BBC contracts now and stuff. So there's more money coming into the WSL than there is any of the leagues. I think the French league is struggling both men and women's for TV money now. So.
Well, she would not only, and let's be honest about it, it's the same as any male or anything who looks a certain way. She's got the look to be marketed as well.
Yeah.
And so, and probably I don't mean that disparagingly. I'd say the same about a male athlete in the same regard. I think she's got the ability to, yeah, if that makes sense. I think she would also be a massively great marketing ploy as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's, I love that question. What about you? Did you get anything there, Rhino? If we...
It's a tough one because, like you say, I haven't really got my finger on the pulse with a lot of the with the A-League and stuff now watching it. Because for people who are not in Australia, the A-League, the top league in Australia, is now moved the TV rights to Paramount, so you've got to buy another subscription, whereas it used to be on KO and free-to-air a lot, so you'd get to watch a lot of it. So my A-League has been watching a couple of Melbourne Victory games this season, so I haven't really seen much of the guys getting around at the moment. But there's a guy, I can't pronounce his name, Irakundu or something. He's getting around in Europe. I saw he's got a crack goal.
Economides?
No, not Economides. I'll put him up on the Twitter page. But I saw a goal that he'd scored a couple of weeks ago, and he's a young fella who's just come through in Australia. I think he's made a move to Europe already, and he's sort of in the lower leagues there, but he's doing really well. I can't pronounce his name, but I'll dig him out and put him on the socials. But that's probably my... Yeah, I don't get to see too much of the Australian players anymore, not being able to watch the A-League as readily.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And I think you've just nailed it. The fact that the A-League's really hard to find now, and you know, you've got to buy another subscription to another channel outside of our mainstream ones, it's made it very hard for those who are not ironed on. I won't be buying a membership for the Brisbane Roar for the first time since I started following them. They've moved grounds again, and the game's in a mess for me. So first time in since the league started, I won't buy a membership. It's not like you've got Villa Park, Brisbane Roar. We're at Suncorp. Then they moved to Redcliffe, and now they're going to a home of rugby union, Ballymore. So they just keep moving, and it's very hard for fans to stick with that.
Yeah.
Some great questions here, though. Really love it. And I like your point of view there as well, guys. Now, I think you've got some there. So I know I'm missing a few because there's so many questions out there, but Spud, you've got some from the Facebook page as well.
Yeah, so this is from our Aussie Villains podcast and Villa Chat. Again, any of our listeners, you're welcome to join that and invite some of your friends, just another Villa community that we have growing on Facebook there, and it's growing all the time. So have a look out for that. Paul has a link on the Twitter page there for that Facebook page, so feel welcome to join that too. The first question we have from our good old soldier, Mark Smith, he says, Pau Torres, if he comes, who drops out for him, if anyone? We will need cover at left back until Moreno is fully fit. So this is a three-part to this question, so we'll answer it as we go because they are three different questions. So that's it. I'll say that again. Pau Torres, if he comes, who drops out for him, if anyone?
I think if anyone drops out, for me, it's probably Konza at the moment. Had a great season, Konza, just gone. But I think Mings is just too valuable to us. And I think bringing in a player like Torres, he's not coming to sit on the bench. And, you know, we've got Diego Carlos there as well, who's got a lot to prove coming back from injury. But for me at the moment, it's probably Konza, because I think Torres brings more on the ball offensively and being able to play out from the back. And I think that's what Emery wants. I think Konza probably... lacks a little bit on that front. Great defender, but I think for me at the moment, he would be the one to drop out.
Yeah, I actually really ummed and ahed, and I thought, could we potentially play the three of them down back? I could see that happening. I could see it working and seeing it being an unbelievable iron wall to try and get through. So it wouldn't surprise me if they all stayed together, but yeah, if it had to be any of them, it'd have to be Konza. But be great to have a man of his quality as a backup or on the bench.
I think Konza is probably the obvious answer there. You can only really base that, and it's not that he's done, because I thought he had an unbelievable season, to be honest. I thought he was brilliant, because one on one defending, he's sensational, and himself and Ming seem to have a really good understanding now again. Like Diego Carlos must be slightly worried, like, because one, Emery didn't sign him. Two, he's had a year out with injuries. And three, when he's on the comeback trail, we've suddenly spent the biggest amount of money we have in another centre-back, and the other two that were already there are playing out their skin. So it's interesting to see. Like, everyone says it's two players for every position, Mings and Torres battling for one side and Kanza and Carlos battling for the other. I don't think it's that simple. I think
like, Torres is coming to play. There's no doubt about that. So there's no way
Emery's going to put that much effort to bring a player that he knows that well, spend that much money to back the lads. He's coming to play. We know he is.
He's most certainly playing.
Just like Carlos was coming to play for Rodrigo, you know? That's just the reality of it.
But isn't it interesting that the I might be wrong, but Mings, Torres and Carlos are all left-footed centre-backs, aren't they? So it's...
Carlos is actually right-footed, though, he's but right-footed. He just plays.
Yeah. He is left-footed, is he? Sorry, I thought he was left-footed. But yeah, it is interesting. I think Carlos is, for me, has got good pedigree and, you know, Brazilian international, done well at Sevilla. But that injury was a big, big injury. So I am interested. We only got a glimpse of him at the end of last season. So I'm really interested to see how he has recovered from the Achilles because, you know, it's... Years gone by, that's a career-finishing injury, the Achilles. But now, obviously, things have advanced a bit. But still, it's going to be interesting to see where he's at. And Spud's right. He wasn't bought in by Emery. So who knows? He might not be fancied. But those options at the back now, it's just incredible, isn't it?
It's phenomenal. And the other thing as well I was thinking about there as well, because I was thinking for myself, how this is all going to work. And then I started kind of thinking as well, you know, Emery, I think, you know, obviously the Stevenage loss burnt him so badly. We obviously went out of the FA Cup and the League Cup in really quick succession. And then I was thinking about that and I was like, and at the time, because you have to rest players and we have an extra competition now, right? So we have enough games to be able to give them a lot of games each. So now instead of having to play Chambers and Bednarak in the Cups, you can play like a really good centre-back pairing anyway, where it's not really dropping in quality. So... all these players, it says to me that he's going to have a stab off every competition he goes into.
But I do think the other way to look at it as well, though, is there'll be teams looking out Villa and seeing, okay, they've bought Torres. There's, you know, obviously some good centre backs to be had there. That if you were, you know, a team in the Premier League, an Everton or whoever it may be, looking at Villa and going, Konsa's had a brilliant season. Probably unlucky not to get England call-ups in the past and a very good, as you said, one-on-one defender, good pace. I think people would be interested in someone like Konsa and I wouldn't be surprised to see some bids come in for him. Similar, probably with Diego Carlos coming off an injury, you probably won't see quite yet people come in for him. But Konsa, definitely, I think there'd be interest there.
Guys, the more we talk about it, the more I'm thinking Konsa might keep his place. I'm looking at how solid they were together and I think it'd be demoralising for Konsa to miss his spot. I don't think he did anything wrong.
Nah. Yeah, great season, but I just can't... I think, like we spoke about, there will be formation changes, but I do think it'll be a back four
I think Carlos is the one who should absolutely be worried because at that age as well, a severe injury doesn't necessarily mean you absolutely come straight back.
And we've said this many a time too, like Emery might see Konsa as a right back. Maybe because he is so limited, like with his ball playing skills, and that's no disrespect to him because he's the best one-on-one defender out of all of them for one-on-one take on.
Yes.
But he's not really an organizer, and he struggles the games that Mings aren't on solely because that's just not him. He's not an organizer like Mings. So there was games where Matty Cash had to fill in as a back three and Moreno was the one pushing on. Who's to say that Konsa won't be the one sending back because he can defend. Konsa can defend, man. But your take, he doesn't tend to get Matty Cash up the pitch as much as, let's say, Gerrard got him up the pitch, but he gets Moreno up the side. So if he started playing Konsa right back, I'd have no problem with that.
You know what I love about this? You know, we've been having this conversation and I've changed my mind three or four times and I'm sure our gaffer's in a much better position than we are. What other questions we got there from the Facebook side of it, boys?
Yeah, so then the second part of Mark's question, then Mark Smith's question was, let me see. Oh, yeah, so then Donker and Chambers, are they in Emery's plans?
Dendonka, I don't think so. Chambers as a backup, probably. And maybe not for either of them. It's a bit of a tough one. So I'll hand over to you guys again.
I think Chambers is gone for me. I think we spoke about it in the past. I just don't think there was probably opportunities for him towards the back end of the season when we were, you know, starting to get a few injuries and whatnot. And I just don't think he was getting the game time that, you know, if you were going to be around the squad, you would be getting. So I think Chambers will probably be gone. Then Donker's an interesting one. He does fill a couple of positions. Like, he played centre-back for Belgium recently in an international and can obviously slot in that defensive midfield position. So I think he's probably got a better chance of sticking around because I think he covers a few spots. And obviously, Emery did use him a little bit towards the back end of the season as well, which says to me he's got a little bit of trust in him. And I think it was the Newcastle game? He played an absolute blinder towards the end of the season, Dendonka, and was everywhere. And so might have just done enough to sort of stay in the squad for a bit as a bit of coverage for me.
I think Chambers is gone. I think Emery, I've said this in the pod before, I don't think Emery has any trust in him whatsoever. He was the one player that Emery knew from Arsenal. So you'd think that when you're bringing a new system into a team, someone that's played your some degree of your system before, you would play regularly just while the system has been put in place. But he didn't. He didn't play him at all. And there was games he threw him on late and stuff like that. But even towards the end, when Sleds came back and stuff from injury, you didn't see much of him at all. So the trust isn't there. I think he'll be moved on. And I mentioned on the pod as well before, I think someone like Luton, who are going to be lacking any Premier League experience, Someone like Chambers, who can play a few positions there, would be a sensible signing for them. It's not going to cost a lot of money. He's got Premier League experience and he can plug gaps around the team. So I don't see him sticking around. And for Dendonka, again, I think the only time he was getting game time, he played the first game against Man United and he was brilliant in the 3-1 win because Kamara was injured. And then towards the back end of the season, Kamara got injured. But the only reason he seemed to get game time is because Bailey got injured at the same time as Kamara. And they had to fiddle it around with John McGinn and stuff. So then Dendonka came in, played brilliantly, played really well against, I think he had two big games, didn't he? Against Newcastle and whatever the game was after that. I can't quite remember, but he played well anyway. But as soon as Kamara came back, he stopped getting any minutes at all whatsoever. And when Bailey and Kamara came back, I think if someone came in with a sensible, reasonable price for Dendonka, we'd take it.
Yeah, I think it does depend on who we get in as well, doesn't it, and who's available. Because obviously, you can't, with the amount of games we're going to play, you've got to have a bit of depth to the squad.
We have now, though, Rhino, don't we? Signing Tillemans, you know, got McGinn, Ramsey, Louise, Kamara. There's plenty there.
Yeah, I do think so. But I do think if you're going to lose the likes of Chambers, you know, he's going to go out. I still think you probably want someone in there who can probably cover a couple of positions just in case. But I don't know. It's an interesting one as well because, you know, I think saying teams like Luton coming in and taking Chambers, they're not going to have the money to pay the wages Callum Chambers wants, or, you know.
Well, Dendonka's on big money. Both
they're on huge money. Even Chambers, these guys are on 60K plus at Villa. Like,
reported that Dendonka was on 100.
Yeah, they're hard to shift, these guys. So it's going to have to, you know, we're in the same boat with players like Coutinho as well, where they're on Luca Dean as well. He's on incredible money to sit on the bench. So, yeah, there's going to be some I'm just hoping there's a couple of moves that come in. Maybe some of the Saudi teams come in and have a look at these guys. But, yeah, it's interesting because there's some big money in that squad, really.
They'd come in. If they're going to come in, it'd be Coutinho because of the name. Any more questions there, Spud, from the Facebook side?
Yeah, and then Mark Smith, he just kind of finished off with a general. It was more of a statement than a question. He said, have you seen the Chris Heck video of the 76ers were transformed? He seems a likable and driven businessman, and I think he's making changes behind the scenes already. The badge and stadium redevelopment plan for starters. I'll start with this. I did see that Chris Heck thing, and I suggested to you to watch it. It's brilliant. It's a really, really good watch. If you get a chance to watch it, just watch it. It's excellent, where he talks about how he commercially changed the 76ers when he came in. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with that one, Spud. I've been following him a fair bit through, you know, a number of sports in America, and that American sporting expertise that he's got there is next level. We're very, very lucky to have him, to be honest, and I'm looking forward to what's happening. It is some weird stuff happening with our Villa Park and transport and the redevelopment being put on hold, and it's a bit of a dampener before the season for me.
I think they've changed the plans now, because they were doing that Villa Live Centre where they're going to put in the restaurants and all that into it. I think they've changed the plans that solely because the government haven't stepped up to do Witten Station, and I think there's no point in them putting all this money in for this massive development of like restaurants and all that stuff if it's only going to be busy on match day. If there's not the infrastructure to carry the people, they're just not going to get the business.
Yeah, so. I don't disagree. I think it's an unfortunate situation. It looks so good, the plans, and look, we hope they do come into fruition.
And then we had a question from Omar Hadji, and I think we've covered a lot, but Omar sends in questions every week, so I'd still like to call a question with respect to him, but we have kind of answered it. So, does the arrival of Pau Torres mean that Konsa potentially moves to the right-back position as part of a back three option? Are we still in the market? And are we still in the market for a new right-back?
I think we're definitely still in the market for a right-back. I don't think I don't think they'd be satisfied. I think we want to have one of the best defences in the Premier League. So I think we'd still be in the market. And I think we've touched on it really well.
If
the market's there, if the right player, they're not going to say no. No way.
And I think, you know, there's the only team in that league who probably, you know, I've got players who are not upgradable is probably Man City. They're probably at a point where they've got the best of the best in every position. Whereas for us,
they'll continue to improve.
Yeah, but for us, I agree. I think if there's a player that Emery has identified at right back that suits him and his plan going forward, I think you'll go for it. I think obviously with Ashley Young going not getting given a contract, I think we will see a right back come in. That's just my gut feel. You know, nothing I know about that, but it's just I do think we'll see a right back come in. And could Konsa go out there? Definitely could fill a gap there, but I don't think that's long term. I don't think that's, you know, where he will be. I think he either plays in centre back, which is his prime position, or he gets shifted on.
Yeah, another great question. A lot of our questions do kind of come across to each other. It's a natural thing that they're going to cross over this time of year. There's a lot of other speculation about players that. At the moment, I just think it's that. I think we just have to be pretty patient. The club's got their targets. I'm guaranteed they'll be speaking to players in the next couple of weeks when they come back from holidays.
That comment there, Paul, there, what you're saying about more players and speaking to, that actually rolls in very well to the last question we have on Facebook as well. It's from the Forever Villains Reborn Facebook page, and it's from Sir Barry White. And He says, signing Pau Torres now means we have four very good centre-halves to rotate. We are short of a goalie and a right-back. Also need a quality winger and centre-forward. To my mind, buying these four players will give us as good a squad as we can get. Who do you see these four players being? I noticed Sevilla have put their whole squad up for sale. Are there any players will suit us from them, not including players who will go to the Champions League clubs? Good question.
Very good question. So there's four positions there. Was there right goalkeeper? Obviously, I think they're referring to. So Barry White's referring to is Robin Olsen, I would say, is the backup goalkeeper. What was the other one? Right back, striker, and
a winger. Yeah, it's a very good question because it covers everything. Like that's why I kind of interrupted there, Paul. Sorry, because I thought you were going to start answering. I said, I better get the question out because.
Well, why don't we do this one? Because four positions is quite a lot. Let's do it as a bit of a collective and see who we put together. And first one that sprung to mind for me as a striker, who I think is probably gettable, is Jonathan David from, I think he's playing for Lille in the French League and has been prolific there for a few years. And I'd love to see him get a chance at in the Premier League and why not at Villa?
Yeah, good call. Really good call. Love it. What about, where's Barnes at the moment?
Yeah, that's I was reading there recently that he's in I don't know, it could be just speculation. There's so much riffraff out there at the moment. No, it's hard to believe anything, but they're saying that the last update I read on that is he was in advanced negotiations with West Ham.
So
I don't know if that's confirmed, if there's an official bid or anything, but that's what I last heard. So
I'm always funny about signing a couple of players from a club that's been relegated as well. Like, I can take one, but a couple, it just feels a bit weird that a fifth of your starting 11 were relegated and you're like, yeah, we need them to get better. I know it's a weird thought. If they're the right player, they're the right player, but it didn't feel right for me.
That's fair enough. I can understand that. I can understand that a bit. But from a winger, I think Harvey Barnes would be a very good winger. Like, he plays more on the left. I do think we're more focused on the right. So it's hard to see yet. Yeah, I don't know. Like, Nico Williams obviously seems to be the one that we're constantly being linked at, and he's the one with the release clause. So does that seem to be the focus now? But if he doesn't want to leave, he doesn't want to leave, you know. And
yeah, I think he's just signed a 1-year extension, isn't he?
Is that kind of true?
Same as you, but you read it on Twitter and you're kind of like, is this legit or not? But I think from what I've read, I think he signed a 1-year deal, but there's still a release clause there. So, but the contracts are not worth the paper they're written on these days. You know, it's they sign them 1 minute and then the next season they're off somewhere anyway. But yeah, he's a really good shout for the winger.
Yeah, what about someone that, I mean, I was looking at, you guys probably already laughed at me previously about Asensio. I'm not sure where he's playing at the moment. He's a right winger, Marco Asensio.
He's just signed for Paris Saint-Germain.
Ah, damn it. Is he the guy I brought up last week and you said the same thing?
No, that was Marcus Thuram. He was confirmed to AC Milan and he walked away from the deal last minute and signed for Inter.
So am I just giving free agents to other clubs at the moment? They're
listening to me. They're listening to this pod and then they're going, sign there. No, Marcus Thuram, yeah, he had a pre-agreement with AC Milan and the last minute he walked away from and signed for Inter, and Asensio's gone to Paris Saint-Germain, yeah.
Hey, what about for a goalkeeper, boys? David De Gea, he's just come off contract at Man United and is available. So
there was no way you'd say no. He's not going to be happy being. In number two.
They'd obviously offered him a contract. There's a bit going on there, but from what I'm reading, is they've offered him a deal, then they've changed their mind, sort of reduced the terms. And he hasn't agreed to it. So basically, his contract was up 1st of July. So he's a free agent. So I'll throw him as the keeper.
Yeah, the my answer is actually stolen from another podcast. And when I heard it, I thought, you know what? It makes absolute sense. And it was something Paddy Kelly said on the Love of Paul McGrath podcast about if he was to go for a backup goalkeeper, why not go for Tom Heaton again? Because he's third choice at United, and I thought that was a very clever move. But since Paddy said that, actually, I think I've read recently that Everton are moving for him.
Yeah, so, and that makes sense for Everton as well. Yeah, you wouldn't argue that one for sure.
But he'd be a good backup keeper, yeah. And then the last part of this question, this is what really gets me interested now from Barry White, where it says, and this is all over the news as well, so Sevilla have basically put their whole squad up for sale. They're in dire straits at the moment. Yeah. So he says, I know that Sevilla have put their whole squad up for sale. Are there any players that will suit us from them, not including players who will go to a Champions League club? I'll start with this, if you don't mind, lads. I actually mentioned him to you, lads, ages ago as well, during the World Cup. And he was someone I said, if we are in the market for a right-back, I think Gabriel Montiel, the Argentinian right-back, he would be absolutely sweet for us if he was to become available for Sevilla. Very hard to get him out if they're not in financial trouble. But, Montiel, the World Cup winner, right-back.
Yeah, and you'd get him pretty, without Van Reed, you'd probably get him pretty cheap as well. You're probably looking at 15, 20 million for him.
Especially if Sevilla are in financial trouble. Like, he's a brilliant player. He's hard as nails. I think he's right back. We're looking for a right back. I think that'd probably be my answer.
Okay.
Who's in this? I'm just going to have to have a quick look who's in there, fellas.
Ronnie Lopez. I'm looking at the ages as well, how many games they've played. There's some bargains to be had there, guys.
The Moroccan goalkeeper as well is in there, your man Bounien, Youssef Bounien. He had a very good World Cup as well.
Yeah, he had a great World Cup. 32, perfect age for a backup keeper there. But they've got a couple really good out-wide attacking players as well. And I was just looking at Campos from Argentina as well. 28 years of age would be really good.
They've got some actually really good players, probably towards the end of their careers, some of them, but there's some quality in there. I can't believe Jesus Navas is still there, to be honest with you. What a career that man's had. But I'll go, I'm just looking at him here. He's got Premier League experience, just as a bit of a, you know, a winger to replace someone like Bertrand Traoré's Eric Lamela.
I knew you were going to say that. I could have just said that's who you're choosing.
Yeah, just because, you know, I think we'll see players like Traoré leave and, you know, more games come in for our squad. You definitely need some quality in there. And the guy's an Argentinian international, played in the league before, so I'll go Lamela.
That's a good answer. But there's a striker there as well, your man, El Nesri. Yeah. He's a pretty good striker as well.
That's exactly who I was looking at for
our Oh, sorry, but...
No, this is good. I mean, we're on the same path. We know what our team... We're pretty sure we know what our team needs, but you'd get some bargains there. I don't reckon you'd be paying any more than 15 million based on where they're at with the... I think you'd pick up some bargains. I don't think we'd be the only club looking at that as well.
Yeah, but not every other club has inside knowledge like we have with Manchi.
I mean, I think there's some quality players in that team. It's a real... I feel sorry for their fans. I mean, you look at Oliver Torres, as we said, at Campos. There's so many players in that squad, and they're all nice ages as well, aren't they?
Yeah, they've just won the Europa League as well, so they're a successful team. It's not like they've been struggling for years and players are trying to get out of there now. These lads have won stuff in recent times, you know. Every club in Europe, as you say, Paul, will be looking at bargain, looking at them as a bargain if it is true that they've put everyone up for sale. So yeah.
Great question.
I really like it. Brilliant question. Cheers, well done, guys. Any more before we finish off the pod?
That's it from the Facebook, anyway.
Yeah, there's probably more in the Twitter feed. We can't get to all of them. Any from yourselves, boys? Anything to make comments on before we finish the podcast?
I'd be expecting a lot of activity for the next 2.5 weeks now because that pre-season tour to America is coming thick and fast. So, hopefully now. All will be revealed in the next couple of weeks. It's the sooner the better too, because I'm sick of all the speculation on Twitter at this stage.
I guess my question would be, and it sort of, you know, works off that, is, you know, we've spoken about different players, different positions. What do you boys see as the priority position right now? If you know, given that Torres looks like he's going to sign, what position would you be targeting next?
Centre forward, because we have no backup. We don't have a lot of goals in us. There's no out-and-out strikers that I could see going, yep. If they're a great striker, I know we're in Europe, but we're on the verge of Europe. We're not playing Champions League. So I think a centre-forward.
Good shout. What about you, Spad?
I think a backup goalkeeper is very important. If Martinez gets injured, we're in big trouble.
Yeah.
Huge trouble, in fact. That's where we might see Konsa actually put out to keep, if need be.
the striker thing, they're definitely in for a striker. Is 100%. You're right, Paul. That's without doubt. It'll be interesting to see what he does with Archer for the preseason, though. Will Archer be given the preseason, or is Emery gotten his head where he's going? It's going to be interesting.
It's a bit of a mixed one, isn't it? Because you could easily say, put him in those games, but. I think to counter that, if Archer's not in his plans, then he's going to want to get his team ready for the season. I can't see the point of if he hasn't got Archer in his plans, there's absolutely no point putting him in the preseason games, because that's where we're going to work out some stuff.
You have the home rule rota rule, though, for the home rule quota rule for the Europa Leagues, though, and for European. So basically what you have to have is your squad has to have 25 named players. Eight of them have to be
Yes.
Have to be homegrown, but homegrown basically means that they've spent more than 3 years at the academy. So four of them are allowed to be just trained by any club in England, and four have to be by Villa. So of the eight, four. So you'd look at Ollie Watkins would count as one of the homegrown, because Kanza would be a homegrown, but they would
Douglas Luiz as well. Would Douglas Luiz being at Man City count as homegrown, or what's his status?
No, well, they signed him from Vasco da Gama, didn't they? And then they put him on loan to Girona, so I would probably say no. Jacob Ramsey would obviously be the home one. Archer would be a home one. Watkins would be an English trained one. Kanza.
Ramsey's brother.
Martinez would be a trained English one for after 10 years at Arsenal. He came through. Ramsey's brother would be a home one. And Tim Eric Bonham will be an English trained one because he obviously signed for West Brom, so he's not a Villa home one. So you're really looking at the only guarantees at the moment that can be guaranteed to be from the Villa trained ones of four, what you need would be the two Ramsey brothers, Cameron Archer, and that's it really. Yeah, and then you're going down to step down a level again to like the likes of Caden Young and all them. But then the flip side of it is it's not law. It just means that if you don't have it, you're only, so like you name your 25, if you can't meet that quota, it doesn't mean you can't enter the competition. It just means if you're a short one, you can only name 24. If you're short two, you can only name 23. So it's not like it's to be all and end all, but I would imagine to meet some kind of quotas, they're going to need to have a couple of them around.
Yeah, 100%.
I like it. Well, look, that, I suppose that's where I'm saying if he's not in his plans, no point in playing him. Like, he knows what he's got already in my mind.
It's such a weird one, though, because he is such a good finisher. Like, you watch him in the England game against Germany the other night, like, what a finish again, like, huh?
I know it's
different when you're playing full-on men's football and stuff, but, like, the Championship's a tough level, like, and he's scoring goals down there, but it'll be interesting. It's one question I can't answer. I genuinely don't know what he's going to do with him, like. I change my mind every week.
You want him to be good because you want him to be good because we've brought him through the ranks, and you want a homegrown player, and then you just have to balance that out with can he actually make it?
Goal scorers, like they don't grow on trees. There's not that many natural goal scorers out there. You know what I mean? Like Ollie Watkins is a great player, but he's not a natural goal scorer. Like he works on goals, whereas Archer's a natural finisher. Like that's what he does. He finishes, like, you know. So yeah, I don't know. I'd love to see him succeed. I'd love to see him succeed, but it would break my heart to see him wasted away on our bench too, because I don't think that's fair on him, you know.
Nah, I like that call as well. What about you, Rhino?
Yeah, I think Archer's. Yeah, it all comes down to that ruling, doesn't it? The homegrown players, like you're saying, we're obviously struggling to get those guys in. And it was interesting towards the last, you know, the back end of last season, where Emery would name two goalkeepers on the bench instead of throwing one of the young guys on the bench. So,
sorry, you're right now. Just because you're right, because Sinisalo would be a Villa trained one as well, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he would come in instead of. Yeah, so I think there's a few in there that just probably get the game time because of that. But and even someone, you know, like even Ashley Young leaving would have been part of, you know, being able to be a homegrown player at some point. But yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think Archer sticks around, and then maybe Duran goes out on loan. That might depending on what we do this, you know, this window, obviously. If there's a striker to come in, that changes everything. But at this point, I'd probably see Duran going out and getting some game time in the lower leagues, or, you know, in the Championship, and then Archer staying round for me at this point.
Yeah. I'm actually really starting to like that. And he's going to give that movement too. That maybe we're going to see a different style to him, because the ball movement is going to be even more clean. And Bailey scored again for Jamaica during the week. Did you see that?
Yes.
Good too.
Every time we try and write him off, he's like that. He's like that girl that you really really wanted. She gives you a little bit of attention, and you're like, oh, I'm still keen. And she's with someone else, and she comes back and she gives you a little bit more attention. And yeah, Bailey's my teenage girlfriend.
I was messaging Spud on just talking about Bailey, and there was a clip of him against, I think it might have been the US, and just in the near the corner flag doing a bit of skill, getting the ball back. And I said to Spud, he's fluttering the eyelashes again, keeping us on the hook. And then I just sent that, and then someone, and I just read a bit further, and he just missed a penalty as well. So I was like, that's Bailey summed up in, you know, a couple of minutes for me. Just something brilliant and something not so brilliant. So
I love it. He's my teenage girlfriend. Guys, we can get you on Twitter as well. You're quite active there, especially you, Spud. Where can we get you on Twitter?
At Spud4685 for now, but that handle is due to change.
Due to change. Okay, well, we'll announce that one as well. And Rhino, for yourself there?
For me, it's at Rhino_Watkins. And I think Spud's might be changing to at Leon Bailey's lover, maybe. I'm not sure.
I thought he was going more generic. Formations are us. Guys, we've missed Tess again. He's our camping guru. He's moved to Australia. He's embraced all things camping. So you'll hear his English tones come through in the next few weeks. At the moment, we've got Ireland. We've got Wales. We've got all different sorts of Australian voices because mine changes every week. You can get us on Twitter at at Aussie Villains. You can get me at Paul_football. Please, guys, through the Love Sport podcast, if you can give us a review, it's through the Love Sport podcast on Apple, on Spotify, however you listen. It will help us with our reach, and we really appreciate it. And it means you'll get to know more people as well through the Villa family. So, guys, it's been another great Villa podcast. Up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
And I will cut this out this week. Well done, boys. That's a tough one. We don't pretend to be experts.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Aussie Villains podcast. You can get Aussie Villains on Twitter. You can get Australian Fans of Villa on Facebook and our Facebook group as well. Please, if you can, on Apple, on Google, Spotify, wherever you listen to the podcast, if you could give us a review, it'd be very much appreciated. Help us get out to a few more people as well. Every week, we will put up questions that we'd love you to answer and ask you to post questions for the podcast as well. This is the Aussie Villains podcast.
Up the Villa!